So, we are so caught up in binaries, this or that, or we're wrapped up in notions of identity. Am I liberal or conservative? Am I a Democrat or Republican? Am I progressive or whatever? This week we saw the rise of the idea of the alt-left, but what is the alt-left? And what does the alt-right even mean for average people everywhere? And should we even identify as alt anything? Today's podcast is on the alt movement, which of course we'll need to cover on the alt-right, its rise, and what are some ramifications of this group rising to power. And we will look at the phenomena of protesters being identified as alt-left. I dig into what it means to potentially identify as alt anything, as well as of the notion of what being on that spectrum can potentially even mean. So welcome back to the podcast. This is the first week I have had two podcasts in one weekend, and I'm looking forward to that. I got one in the can, I got another one getting ready to get into the can. So that's great. I got the semester off with a really good start at my main position in student life and leadership at Paradise Valley Community College, and that was really good. It had been a very long week with some very long days and some very hot temperatures. And it appears that we are in for another heat wave here in Phoenix for the next week. And so please just send us some cool thoughts to us here at the Inclusive Activism Podcast. Also today, we got the news that Sheriff Joe Arpaio was just pardoned by the president, which is a huge blow to all Maricopa County residents. And at this time, sadly, the DACA program is set to get a ruling on September 5th. And I'm really hoping and praying that the early reports of its demise are wrong, as I have a lot of people I love and care about that would be affected by that ruling. So in short, it's still kind of a very dark time, and we need some positive thoughts and prayers for everyone that is a fan of inclusive activism specifically. Hell, I could use your positivity, your positive thoughts and prayers. So if you can, please pass that along. That would be greatly appreciated. Still in a bit of a holding pattern with some things. I got some bits of good news last week, but I'm hesitant to celebrate till I know everything pans out the way I'm hoping. So remember, when you send me these positive thoughts, these ideas, these prayers, these whatevers, you can always email me at inclusiveactivism@cox.net, or you can just give me in person. Like, and I'll play them on the podcast, which would be really cool. Like, your positive thoughts listed as an audio file and played on the podcast would be awesome. That phone number to do that is 860-576-9393, and I would love to hear those shared thoughts, those prayers, those well wishes. All those things go a long, long way to help make sure that we're doing a good job and the things that we really need to do here. Also, please remember to review us on iTunes. Still only got 3 reviews on iTunes, and I do understand, for some stupid reason, it is really hard to review the podcast on your phone on Apple Podcasts. They won't like send for whatever reason. So you might have to do it on a desktop or an iPad potentially. Also, you can rate and review us on Stitcher. That makes a big difference. Please share any podcast that you thought was really great on social media. Don't just share it. Say why you're sharing it, because people want to know why you think this is something great, not just what is this random ass thing out here. All these things can go a really long way to make a significant difference for us here at the Inclusive Activism Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to the podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. These are great ways for me to show proof of work to potential sponsors. It is also going to go a long way to help me and my producer, Sarah, get paid for our work someday. Right now, it is a passion of love, something that we care about deeply, but at the same point in time, this is a lot of hours of time. And while I know Sarah's getting better as a producer, while I know I'm getting better as a podcaster / public speaker, I do think the opportunity to get some type of financial reward for the work that we're doing here, I think would make a big difference for us. And that's something that we're going to be looking and evaluating moving into 2018. But as it stands, everything's going pretty well in the podcast. A lot of podcasts have 100 downloads at least. And so things are going well, but More of those shares, more of those reviews, more of those recommendations make a big, big difference for us. And the fact that you're in community with us, the fact that you're listening to these podcasts on a weekly basis means a lot. It means a lot to me personally. I know one of my friends, Jill at Anytown, said, yeah, I remember listening to that on the podcast. And I just remember being like really touched that someone was listening and they were willing to say so. But you don't have to wait and see me in person to do that. That's why that voicemail line's there. Both me and Sarah are touched by those validations and affirmations. And so if you can send those to us, we'd appreciate it. 860-576-9393 or inclusiveactivism@cox.net. So checking in on my activism, I'm recording this the same week that I did in-groups and out-groups, so I haven't been able to do much. The protest downtown sadly did see some violence, with tear gas being used on the protesters. I'll kind of talk about some of the things that I've seen and noticed with that in this podcast further. Now, next Thursday, I am going to be part of a DACA auction with Aliento. So I'll have to tell you more about that because I don't know what's going to happen because I wasn't able to attend the pre-action plan this Saturday. But I am planning on going this Thursday if it's possible. We also donated Gatorade and granola bars for people at the trunk action. It looks like a surgical mask are going to be something I need to send, as well as safety goggles, sadly, because tear gas was part of that experience. So checking in on self-care specifically, since I've returned to work, the mindfulness has been sacrificed, and those close to me have sadly noticed. I haven't been so mindful. I've been stuck in my own ball of thinking, my own little world or way of thinking. I'm much less patient, much more frustrated, and I'm really looking forward to getting back on track with that next week. And so I think getting back to my mindfulness meditations is going to be really good for me and something I can't wait to see happen. Lifting, though, has been going very strong, thankfully, due to the presence of my new lifting partner. He's someone that pushes me both physically, mentally, and spiritually in really good and positive ways. I've said between you, me, and us both saying no, it's been a good match. So on days I don't feel like pushing, he pushes me. On days he doesn't feel like pushing, I push him. And then on days we both probably would be better sitting it out, we agree. So between you, me, we, and agree, we're doing pretty good. And I'm really blessed that that's going well. My body is reacting in very different ways. I'm very, very sore. I've got some tendonitis. My shoulders are kind of achy. My knees are kind of tired. But I know I'm going to be responding in the next couple weeks. Now, my cardio has been sort of mixed. I know during my workouts, especially with my workout partner, my heart rate's been really high during lifting. And I've also been doing some speed work with a speed ladder in my backyard over the weekend, but I'm not always getting my 30 minutes full of elliptical training in, and I don't know exactly how my heart's doing with that. I'm gonna have to really delve into my Apple Watch and see what it's telling me there. When I have more on that, I will let you know, but I haven't had really the time to kind of check because the 12-hour days in the heat were getting to me. Although I'm feeling a little bit better here on Sunday, I'm back at the grind again on Monday. So we'll see how it goes. And also know that please, as far as in the self-care area, I need a little bit of help too, both personally and professionally. I'm in just a bit of a weird space, and I'm really hoping to see some things kind of pan out, and I don't know that they are yet, and that's causing a lot of stress and worry. There's some stress and worry with stuff that's going on with my family members too, and so I really could use positive thoughts and prayers. I am on the precipice of several bad or several potentially really good things, and those attracting that positivity, I think, really makes a really, really big difference. With that being said, let's move on with the podcast for today, The Ramifications of Being Alt. So first thing, when we look and think of alt, the first thing that we usually are going to consider is the idea of being alt-right. So let's take a minute and look at what is that, what does it mean, and where did this alt-right stuff come from? So this is some stuff I found on Wikipedia specifically. I know some people don't like Wikipedia, and Wikipedia is weird. You know, it does slam one of my friends pretty hard, which is sad because it's not who he is. But at the same point in time, the value in it is in it being more correct. So this is where I got some of that stuff from. The alt-right, or alternative right, is a loosely defined group of people with far-right ideologies who reject mainstream conservative in favor of white nationalism, principally in the United States, but also to a lesser degree in Canada and Europe. Paul Gottfried was the first person to use the term alternative right when referring specifically to developments within American right-wing politics around 2008. The term has since gained wide currency with the rise of the so-called alt-right. White supremacist Richard Spencer used the term in 2010 in reference to a movement centered on white nationalism and did so, according to the Associated Press, in order to disguise overt racism, white supremacism, and neo-Nazism. I didn't know Nazism was a word. Nazism? Maybe it's Nazism. The term also drew considerable media attention and controversy during and after the 2016 presidential election. Wow, that was such a time. I can't remember. Remember when everybody was like 2016 so bad because all the people were dying and it just seemed like a rough year? 2016 seems like a giant slice of cake compared to 2017. Rant over. Alt-right beliefs have been described as isolationist. Ooh, let's try that again. Isolationist, protectionist, anti-Semitic, and white supremacist, frequently overlapping with neo-Nazism, nativism, which I don't get nativism. Like, you're not natives. Like, no natives are in the alt-right movement. Again, rant over. Islamophobia, anti-feminism, homophobia, right-wing populism, and the neo-reactionary movement. I've never even heard of the neo-reactionary movement. I'm going to have to read up on that. The concept has been further associated with several groups from American nationalists to neo-monarchists to men's rights advocates. Oh, I love men's rights advocates. Ridiculous. And the 2016 presidential campaign of Donald Trump. Alt-right has its roots in internet websites such as 4chan and 8chan, God, 4chan, where anonymous members create and use internet memes to express their ideologies. It is difficult to tell how much of what people write in these venues is serious and how much is intended to provoke outrage. Oh, trolls, man. The trolls. Trolls are like creating problems in politics. Members of the alt-right use websites like Alternative Right, Twitter, Breitbart, and Reddit to convey their message. Alt-right postings generally support the policies of Donald Trump and Mike Pence and oppose immigration, multiculturalism, and political correctness. The alt-right has had a significant influence on conservative thought in the United States, such as the Sailor strategy for winning political support, along with close ties to the Trump administration. It has been a key reason for Trump's win in the 2016 election. The Trump administration includes several figures associated with the alt-right, such as former, as of a few weeks ago, former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon. In 2016, Bannon described Breitbart, that was funny, Breitbart as the platform for the alt-right, with the goal of promoting the ideology, which is gross. So that being said, the alt-right is the new nationalist movement, and the thought of popular nationalism is the heart of the movement, although you do need to be white in order to be right with that organization specifically. Here are some terms and ideas that have become to be associated with the alt-right. So, blood and soil. Video taken at the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville showed marchers chanting blood and soil. This phrase is a 19th century German nationalist term that connotates a mystical bond between the blood of an ethnic group and the soil of a country. If that's the case, I'm really excited because that blood should be connected with native people versus white people because white people haven't been here as long. And much more native blood has been spilt on this continent. Has been native blood, so it would make more sense that that spiritual connection would be more with native people. I would like to see, or would hope that that thought would maybe help people that live here as a whole. It was also used as a Nazi slogan in Germany during the 1930s and 1940s, and has since been transported to neo-Nazi groups and other white supremacists across the world, Mr. Pitcage has said. It is also one of several Nazi symbols that have been adopted as a slogan by some members of the alt-right. It also is marked by the idea of globalism. Globalism is used as a synonym for globalization, a network of economic interconnection that has become the dominant international system since the Cold War. The word has been commonly used since Mr. Trump railed against globalism frequently on the campaign trail. For the far right, globalism has had a distinct xenophobic and anti-immigrant and anti-Semitic overtone. It refers to a conspiratorial worldview, a cabal that likes open borders, diversity, and weak nation states, and that dislikes white people, Christianity, and the traditional culture of their own country. Yes, because globalism, of course, would have to favor non-white people of different religions, because what? I don't understand that thinking. Here's another term that we've heard before that you might not have heard before, which is just fascinating too. It's the idea of white genocide. White genocide is a white nationalist belief that white people as a race are endangered and face extinction as a result of non-white immigration and marriage between races, a process that is being manipulated by Jews, according to Mr. Lentz. It is the underlying concept behind far-right anti-immigration arguments, especially those aimed at immigrants who are not white Christians. This concept was also popularized by Bob Whitaker, a former economics professor and Reagan appointee at the Office of Personnel Management, who wrote a 220-word mantra on the subject and ended with the rallying cry, "Anti-racist is the code for anti-white." Nope, that's not how that works, Bob. Mr. Pitcavage said that the concept of white genocide is often communicated online through a white supremacist saying called the 14 words. So here's your 14 words. We must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. Again, multiculturalism doesn't mean not white. It has to include white because white's a culture. Whiteness is a culture. I mean, it's the dominant, supported culture here in the United States. But this whole notion of white genocide, I can tell you if someone that survived genocide, like my people in my line, have had to survive genocide, trust me, dude, white genocide is not a thing. When genocide comes to you, it's not going to be this, it's not going to come coded. It's going to come with, blankets and smallpox and people shooting children in the middle of the freezing cold. It doesn't come in the form of anti-racism. So the second notion has been this idea. There's this new notion, right? And it's being called alt-left. So again, getting some of this information from Wikipedia. So I'm going to be getting a lot of this from here, but I'll be also adding my own thoughts and opinions on this. So alt-left is a neologism introduced by the far-right media online in 2016, suggesting the existence of an ideological fringe movement on the political left, and they consider it to be in direct opposition from the alt-right. The term began being used by Sean Hannity and Fox News to describe groups, outlets, or individuals who were perceived as being critical of the president-elect Donald Trump. Donald Trump used the term during remarks on the Charlottesville rally in August 15th. Unlike the term alt-right, which was coined by those on the extreme right who comprised the movement, as noted by Washington Post writer Aaron Blake, alt-left was coined by its opponents and doesn't actually have any subscribers. According to Joel Rich Hawley, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Alabama, no such label has ever been adopted by any members of the progressive left, while acknowledging that there were anti-fascism advocates on the left who engage in political confrontation against members of the far right. Oren Segal, director of the Anti-Defamation League Center on Extremism, concurred that no equivalent was used to identify as being part of the alt-right exists, stating that anti-fascist groups were not consciously aiming to brand themselves in that manner. indirect ideology from the white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and other members of far-right groups who had undertaken mainstreaming their own ideology. Wow. Its usage eventually circulated within conservative online media and was popularized around those circles used by the Fox News Channel host Sean Hannity and suggest the existence of a similar ideological fringe movement on the political left. On November 14th, 2016 edition of his Fox News program, Hannity used the term to extricate the alt-left media together with mainstream and radical media as being biased against President-elect Trump. According to the New Republic, the term was popularized after it was picked up by Fox News as a way to frame the Democratic wing led by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren as extremists. An early use of the term, Gary Bauer stated on CNN, The Lead with Jake Tapper, it's not the alt-right, it's not the alt-left, it's alt-delete. It gets the bums out. It's a way of equating right and left-wing populism. Both the term and the concept of an alt-left is sort of an opposite but equal mirror of the alt-right has generated controversy for likening the social critics of neo-Nazism to neo-Nazis. The term has been criticized as a label that, unlike the alt-right, was not coined by the group it purports to describe, but rather was created by the political opponents as a political smear trying to imply its false equivalence. According to Branko Mukhtarik, an assistant editor of Jacobin magazine, the label refers to a faction of the political left that does not exist as the progressive or far-left segments of political ideology. It does not identify by any other particular collective noun. Mark Pickavage of the Anti-Defamation League states the term was made up by extremist groups to create a false equivalence between the far-right and anything vaguely left-seeming that they didn't like. So they're trying to say, like, this thing is as bad as this other thing, and we're gonna say it's as bad as this other thing by giving it the same type of name, but then giving it that dichotomous sense of equivalency. According to journalist Peter Benart, what Trump calls the alt-left is actually Antifa, not to be confused with Donald's Trump of the word. BuzzFeed UK published an article about the alt-left media in the United Kingdom on May 2016. The article refers to the alt-left news sites such as The Other Angry Voice, The Canary, Evolve Politics, Squawk Box, which are hyper-partisan supporters of the Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn. The term gained prevalence when U.S. President Donald Trump used the phrase during remarks on the Charlottesville rally on August 15, 2017. Researchers such as Mark Pickavage state the alt-left does not actually exist, and the derogatory term has been made up to create an equation between the far-right and certain activists and politicians on the left. So what does this mean? What does this mean for you and me? Well, it means that the alt-left is a disinformation campaign. So what is disinformation? Disinformation is false information spread deliberately to deceive. The English word disinformation is a translation of a Russian word that I'm not going to attempt to try to say. It is derived from the title of a KGB black propaganda department. The book Disinformation documents that Joseph Stalin coined the term, giving it a French-sounding name to falsely claim it had a Western origin. Russian use began with a special disinformation office in 1923. Disinformation was defined in the Great Soviet Encyclopedia as false information with the intention to deceive public opinion. Operation Infection was a Soviet disinformation campaign to influence opinion that the U.S. invented AIDS. The U.S. did not actively encounter this disinformation until 1980, when a fake document was reported that U.S. also supported apartheid. So difference information is putting information out there, acting like it's real, acting like it really exists, when there really is no grounding in this thing. it's kind of interesting that this disinformation campaign is also associated with Russians, because like the Donald Trump, the alt-right, the Russians, like I'm not going to get all conspiracy theorists on you, but the connections are pretty clear. So what groups are likened to or compromise the notion of alt-left? The first group is Antifa. Antifa is a contraction of the word anti-fascist. It was coined in Germany in the 1960s and 70s by a network of groups that spread across Europe to confront right-wing extremists, according to Mr. Petkavich. A similar movement was seen in the 1980s in the United States and has re-emerged recently as the alt-right has risen to prominence. For some so-called Antifa members, the goal is to physically confront white supremacists. If they can get at them, to assault them, and engage them in street fighting. That was the goal of Antifa members, to get into fights. Members of the alt-right broadly portray protesters who oppose them as Antifa. So you're never just a protester, you're always an Antifa member specifically, and you're looking to get in a fight. This is the way this idea has been framed. Or you're also lumped in as alt-left specifically. And they say they bear some responsibility for any violence that ensues. This was a claim that was made by Mr. Trump in the last couple weeks specifically. But analysts said comparing Antifa with neo-Nazis or white supremacist protesters was a false equivalence. Another group that is associated with alt-left specifically is called cuck. Cuck is an insult used by the alt-right to attack the masculinity of other conservatives whom the movement deemed insufficiently committed to racism and anti-Semitism. Cuck is also short for cuckold, a word dating back to the Middle Ages that describes a man who knows his wife is sleeping with other men and does not object. Mr. Lynn said the use of the word by the alt-right has also created and maintained some racial overtones as well. And the last group associated with the alt-left is the SJW, and the SJW is short for Social Justice Warrior. It is used by the right as an epithet for someone who advocates liberal causes like feminism, racial justice, or gay and transgender rights. It is also sometimes used to imply that person's online advocacy is cause for insincere or is done only for appearances. It became widely used during the Gamergate, a controversy that began in 2018 over sexism in video game subcultures. So in short, there is a person named Mr. Lenz whose organization has specific criteria for which groups it classifies as Nazi organization, said that the right uses the phrase SJW to rhetorically address the fact that the left sometimes calls anyone who disagrees with it Nazis specifically. He said that the alt-right created the term so its followers had a similar blanket term in which to deride the left. So in short, the alt-left exists in no specific way anyway. There might be more militant leftist groups, but at the same time, they are not the alt-left that is framed in this specific way by the president. And he's just trying to find a way to really correlate the alt-right, which is like known bad guys, with people in opposition to those in the alt-right, which should be like everybody, right? Nobody wants to be a white supremacist specifically. I mean, your average happy person isn't trying to be a white supremacist. Your average happy person isn't attempting to be a racist specifically. But a correlation with those in opposition to those as from the alt-right are saying that this is wrong as like alt-left or crazy, like Antifa armed people trying to fight. Like you see how it pulls down those in opposition by correlating them with as equal specifically. So that brings me to our last topic. Alt is a branding of fear, violence, and fear-mongering. To be associated with this idea of alt is to thankfully already be associated with pushing an extremist agenda whose ends are to choose to intimidate with violence and fear. Now, specifically Antifa, the most armed group of leftists, feel as though they must protect other non-violent protesters. Antifa, linked with the alt-left, is short for anti-fascists, and adherents are predominantly communists, socialists, and anarchists who reject turning to the police or the state to halt the advance of white supremacy. They have resorted to using force at rallies, saying it is necessary to at times confront the threat of that state. But this has led to a discussion about violence and nonviolence and what it means in protest movements. Now, I will say personally, I am a lover and always will be a lover of nonviolence specifically. I am a nonviolent practitioner. I'm not judging other people, I'm talking about what I like. But non-hyphen violence is a lot of the time associated with passive pacifism, and that's not what I'm into. I don't think protests should be passive pacifism either. I think they should be active movements with a specific goal, trying to challenge what's wrong and trying to create a new way of making what's right become available. The issue I am seeing right now is there's so many different elements converging right now that protesters cannot get on a unified or a same page to create a proper nonviolent direct action. Back in the day, when people met weekly, they met in order to create and plan direct action to make movements happen locally, and would also have ladder plans that would happen later on to create systemic movements, not just locally, but nationwide. Those things aren't happening so much from what I can tell right now, and I don't know because I'm not there. This is just what I'm seeing. But I must say that being a person with a full-time job makes me a part-time protester. So when I talk about being nonviolent, this is without a doubt the hardest strategy to implement in order to create social change. And being a full-time worker makes me a part-time protester at best. Sometimes I'm not even there. Many times I'm not even there. So I'm not saying this is a critique to the people that actually show up and are doing the fight all the time. It's just how I feel about specific things. Now, on the other side of things, police, security, border control, and other powerful interests of the state are not held to the same standards of nonviolent action. If protesters are violent, it is seen as their fault. If they fight back against a fight started by a state agent, they are again over and over seen as guilty since they are challenging the authority or power of that state, even if that power was wrong in the first place. I believe this is kind of what happened in Phoenix last week. I was not there. I have seen a few videos, but again, I wasn't there. These are just off videos I've seen. And again, if you want to correct me on this, please feel free to do so. And I think there might have been some internal outside agents, so like people acting as nonviolent protesters, whose purpose was to incite violence and create scandal and doubt about the intentions of the protesters as part of the anti-Trump protest. But I think there was folks there just trying to incite violence or create trouble. And those are the people that threw the bottles. Again, these are plastic water bottles. So the idea that this plastic water bottle was really going to hurt police seems a bit silly to me. But they were thrown at police. That being said, I do think the tear gas attack without warning was a total overreaction by Phoenix PD. I know the planned intention was to shut down any potential shit show like we saw in Charlotte specifically, but in doing so, they played right into those agents' hands whose sole purpose was to create this intrigue. So I don't know if it was extremist anarchists within the group or if it was counter-protesters infiltrating that group in order to create this notion of like the protesters as being bad. But I do think someone was there trying to ruin what was the plan by everybody there. So this person was an outside agent, not an internal agent, trying to create this problem. And that is the problem. When someone throws tear gas back at police, they are seen as troublemakers, not the person that originally did the action. All people are punished as though all people are the same, right? Like, you can't target tear gas with the person that threw the bottle or with a small group of people that might have been trying to stir up the problem in the first place. They treated all protesters as the same. Everybody was tear gassed, and everybody was made to move, even though it wasn't everybody being violent specifically. It was a very, very small group of people specifically being violent. They didn't target the violent people, they targeted everybody. That being said, I would like to see a little bit more nonviolent direct action strategy used. However, only those who have been deeply trained in it and known members of the resistance should be part of those actions in the future. That's kind of part of the problem that can happen when there's like a protest group from this place, a protest group from this place, a protest group from this place. Like, there must have been like 7 to 8 different members of people downtown protesting the Phoenix rally. And I don't know if they all stayed in their like respective spots or if they kind of cross-mingled a bit. I mean, I would probably cross-mingle a bit because I have a lot of different friends in a lot of different areas. But it's hard to have like the same plan when eight different sets of people were meeting together and there was no pre-planning thing happening. Again, though, as an outsider, I don't see this happening now. It seems as though most of the protests that are happening recently are somewhat reactionary. Like, for example, there was a flash protest, which just happened the same day that the news of Arpaio being pardoned. So I know people went down and protested that day when they heard Arpaio was being pardoned. Now, I don't know, again, what was the agenda or purpose, and the agenda or purpose of that goal might have been just to show dissent rather than push a specific known nonviolent agenda. I don't know because I wasn't there, and sadly I have a full-time job, but at least it allows me to change the world in small ways, but I don't know, and I'm not in on all parts of that thing. So admittedly, I do need to get more personally involved before I would critique any further, and I do plan on being part of a planned action this week. So, in review of this podcast on the ramifications of being alt, the major points of this podcast were: the alt-right is a new form of white nationalism seeking the validity of a political platform. There is no legitimate political platform for hate, not in this country, and not on my watch. The alt-left does not exist and is actually a disinformation campaign by people on the alt-right. They're trying to drag down counter-protesters, correlating them as equivalent to the alt-right, saying that an anti-fascist is the same as a neo-Nazi is ridiculous. An anti-fascist is just wanting neo-Nazis not to be there doing their thing. Anti-fascist doesn't mean you're violent. Anti-fascism doesn't mean you want to fight. It may mean you want to protect people you want to love and care about, but it doesn't mean you want to create fights all the time. Them talking about them wanting to be violent or fighting in the streets is like that disinformation that's being spread. More so, they're trying to protect folks. And I know Cornel West had said he would have been in big, big trouble had it not been for armed members of left groups trying to make sure he was okay. And third, alt-right banning is an attempt for those who push against the alt-right to make them equal to or saying they have similar violent intentions as those on the alt-right or those who support the alt-right. This alt-right branding and saying that there is an alt-left is trying to create a correlation when none really exists. So I know this podcast was a bit more reporty, right? It was more what's happening now, what's going on now, where all this stuff come from. And I'm kind of glad and happy to do that because I know I learned a lot doing this. So again, I don't know a lot about this. This is what I found online. This is what I did through my own research. So especially if you know more about what's been going on locally, or maybe what's even going on nationally, I would love for you to call and let me know. The voicemail line is 860-576-9393. Again, you can call me at 860-576-9393. You also can email me at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. Again, that's not just a way for you to educate me, it's a way to educate my listeners as well, and so more and more people know and understand what's going on and get on the same page with what's really happening out there. Because things are evolving quickly, and the more and more we can get to and understand what's happening, I think we can make a difference. And so please make this podcast a space where we can hear those things, answer questions, understand things, hear different scenarios, situations, and get that stuff in on future podcasts as well. And as always, if you're interested in booking me or bringing the power of inclusive activism to your organization, you can always do so at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. And you can learn more about me, more about Sarah, and more about this organization at www.inclusiveactivism.com. Thank you so much for listening. I can't wait to get a hold of you in the next couple weeks. Y'all be safe out there. We'll be right back.